This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
As you look at surveys that have been done over the years about popular figures in the United States, popular historical figures, what you discover is that Joseph Smith is rising in the public consciousness.
Coming up next, the what, the why, and the how of Joseph Smith and his papers.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
K-Jazz Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Tonight is the first of a series on the initial volumes of the Joseph Smith Papers that have recently been published. Now, valuable time and resources have been dedicated to the production of these volumes. Now, why? Well, it's important in a larger sense to understand why these commitments have been made. What's in these volumes? What can we learn from them? And how are they best to be used? Well, these questions and more, the scholars will answer.
Richard E. Turley, Jr.
Who is this Joseph Smith? What can we learn about him? What makes him so appealing that people will dedicate their lives in the way that's required by firm adherence to membership in the church? Why would someone want to pay 10% of their income to a church? What is it that's so powerful about that church that draws them into it? Well, to answer that question from the standpoint of someone who wants to examine Joseph Smith academically, you need a firm, reliable set of documents, and that's what the Joseph Smith Papers provides.
Stephen C. Harper.
The papers of Joseph Smith are vital to every Latter-day Saint. Why is that? Because Mormonism is fundamentally historical. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. Most religious traditions are theological. Their basic doctrines or their premises about the nature of God or atonement or whatever the subject may be, the nature of mankind. Those doctrines derive from philosophical creeds or from theological work. It's not the same in the restored church of Jesus Christ. The doctrine of the restored church of Jesus Christ is historical. And if you think about it for a minute, you'll know exactly what I mean. Joseph Smith claims to have participated in a historical event early in the spring of 1820. He reads a passage of scripture. It prompts him to go to the woods. He prays. He receives a theophany. He documents that vision of God and Christ. And Mormonism is like that. Places, groves, buildings, rivers in which people were baptized after being ordained by heavenly messengers. It's this blending of the divine, the supernatural, and the mundane, the historical world, times, places, events, real life people, that makes Mormonism, that makes the restored gospel. And even and just as important as the events in the first place is the documentation of the events. It doesn't matter if Joseph Smith receives a vision of God and Christ if he never communicates it to anyone. It doesn't matter if he got ordained by angels if that doesn't get handed down to anyone. And so the fact that Joseph Smith recorded these experiences and the doctrines and powers that result from these experiences is fundamental. If Joseph does not get his papers recorded, then we don't know that there are three degrees of heavenly glory, or an oath and covenant of the priesthood, or a new and everlasting covenant of marriage, or a first vision, or a restoration of the priesthood, or baptism by immersion by somebody who has authority. There's none of that makes its way down to me, and I have no religion then. So It is the history of the restored gospel is vital. It's that without which there isn't a restored gospel. And good folks may never read a volume of the Joseph Smith papers. I'm guessing most won't. And it won't really matter to them that the papers are produced. But it will matter that the papers of Joseph Smith exist and that they are preserved and that they are accessible or transmitted down to future generations. Of course, we've done the most important work on that front by putting the most vital of Joseph's documents in the scriptures, the slice of his history that's the most relevant of all, the revelations that are most fundamental to the faith. Those are all, of course, canonized for us in the scriptures. And that's because they are scripture. They are those pieces of history are our religion, our faith.
The method of documentary editing used by the editors of the Joseph Smith papers, well, it's different than that used by those who write narrative history. For that reason, it is important to understand how to use the published volumes of the prophet's papers.
There is a common misconception or a common problem that some people have when they think about history. I know that when I was studying history in college and I would tell people that, they would say, oh, you know, you're interested in dates and places. You're good at memorizing facts about the past. And I think for many people, that's what a historian is. A historian knows some stuff about the past. That's not what a historian thinks a historian is. A lot of people know some stuff about the past. There's a lot of history buffs that know 10 times, 100 times more about certain things than I do or that other historians do. A historian is someone who thinks about the past in a particular way and who goes about recovering the past or explaining the past according to a historical method. In other words, a historian works to gain access to all of the records that exist about a particular part of the past. And a historian works to let those records speak for themselves. And a historian tries not to prejudge the past, but rather to listen to what the past says for itself and then explain or relate the past on its own terms. If we're going to know anything about Joseph Smith's past, we have to have his documents, his papers. If he never made any papers, all we would know is that he is one of 100 Joseph Smiths in the census. That's it. One of 100 farmers named Joseph Smith in the census. So he documents his experiences, and we can read them. And when we read them, we should let him explain to us what his experience was like.
Having the papers of Joseph Smith, then, gathered and organized into this kind of a format, allows modern readers to better understand the surviving historical record, which in turn then helps them to better understand Joseph Smith himself.
For many Latter-day Saints, Joseph Smith is a pulpit figure. They know him through the revelations that came through him. They know him through speeches that he gave or excerpts from those speeches that have been used in speeches or articles by others. So in many ways, they see Joseph Smith as a man behind a pulpit delivering a discourse. He was that. Yet he was a much more multidimensional person than that. The Joseph Smith Papers Project allows us to see Joseph Smith in a wide variety of settings where he's facing the normal challenges of life. Some people, particularly Latter-day Saints, have come to believe incorrectly that because he was revered as a prophet of God, he somehow escaped the vicissitudes of life. When you read Joseph Smith in the pages of the Joseph Smith Papers, you see a man who's facing the same kinds of challenges that you and I face. And what that does is allow the reader to see him and to gain a deeper respect for the way he met those challenges himself. They begin to think, well, if he could face these challenges, which were often worse than anything I've ever faced, then surely I can handle the little portion that has been allocated to me.
The project also helps modern readers to distinguish between legends and lore and real history.
Whenever you have someone such as Joseph Smith who
garners a lot of attention from the public. You get twin phenomena. You get the phenomenon of getting additional correct historical information about him. And then you get the phenomenon of people telling stories about him that may in part be based on their recollections of something they heard or something someone told them or something a friend of a friend told them. And that generates its own kind of aura or mystique. And one of the values of the Joseph Smith Papers Project is that it allows us to cut through a lot of this mystique and a lot of the misinformation that comes from rumor and get down to the reality, to the hard facts that are established in documentation.
The volumes of the Joseph Smith Papers, they will and they should influence all future written works on Joseph Smith and the early events of the restoration of Christ's gospel.
But I see them as providing a foundation for an entire body of work, both serious academic work and popular work, that will rest upon this foundation in the future as people look at it and decide that they'll use the Joseph Smith Papers for writing biographies, for writing more popular accounts of Joseph Smith that might be read by an even broader public. So if you think about this as a kind of pyramid, the Joseph Smith Papers Project rests at the bottom of the pyramid as the foundation. And on top of that foundation, there will be built over succeeding decades an entire body of historical works, some geared towards an academic audience, some geared toward a popular audience, that will use that foundation to provide accurate, interesting, and inspiring history about the life of Joseph Smith. So I see the Papers Project as leaving a long legacy of value for future generations, a value that exceeds current biographies on Joseph Smith, a value that exceeds a lot of the transient kinds of secondary materials.
As you might expect, Joseph Smith and his life's work, they're inextricably tied together. To understand the one is to better know the other.
You may have read a lot about Joseph Smith in the past. You may consider yourself to be a Joseph Smith scholar. But if you read through all of the volumes of the Joseph Smith Papers Project as they are created, you will understand Joseph Smith at the end in a far richer way than you understood him in the beginning. If at the beginning he was a one- or two-dimensional figure, at the end he will be a rich three-dimensional figure for you. He has become that for me.
The importance of the Joseph Smith Papers Project, oh, it's hard to overstate. The amount of scholarly work that's being applied to the Prophet's papers illustrates that importance.
Mark Ashurst McGee.
The Joseph Smith Papers Project is a multi-series, multi-volume edition. There's a general introduction for the entire edition, which can be found in the first volume of the first series, the journal series. And the general introduction covers briefly Joseph Smith's life, his record-keeping practices, and the documents that grew out of his record-keeping practices. The edition is composed of six series, which are defined by genre or the type of document. For example, journals or revelations or legal records. And each series has an introduction that can be found in the first volume of the series. The general arrangement principle for each series is chronological. And that's also the general arrangement principle for each volume. So the documents are arranged in chronological order. And each volume has its own introduction, which is a summary of the time period. Then we come to the individual documents of the Joseph Smith Papers. And each document has its own structure. The document is introduced with some notes, such as a bibliographical description of the author and the title of the document. Also a physical description of the actual artifact itself as opposed to the text inscribed therein. Also the provenance of the document, or in other words, the origins and creation of the document and its custodial history. The history, the chain of ownership from the original creators down to the repository where it resides today, how it got there. And this shows us that the document is indeed authentic. Then there's a historical introduction. And this is not just an introduction to the general themes or content of the document, but it's an introduction to the document as a document. What was the intent for the document? Why was it created? And how was it produced? Who produced it? Where did they produce it? When did they produce it? These kinds of questions. Several of Joseph Smith's documents are very long documents, and they are multi-entry documents. For example, the journals with journal entries, or minute books with various minutes in them. And these long multi-entry documents have a structure of their own internal to the document. And that is, we add an editorial dateline before each entry, which is a standardized dateline of the date, the month, the year, and the weekday. And this is in a different font and type size, and it's italicized so that you can easily distinguish it from the actual text, and it helps you navigate the volume as you do your research.
Now, as we've mentioned, history is only as good as its documents, and the documents are only as useful as they are readable.
In verifying the transcripts of Joseph Smith's documents, we follow the practices that have been set forth by the Founding Fathers projects and that are current in the field of documentary editing. We follow a rigorous three-stage process to make sure we get the transcripts absolutely accurate to the original documents, word for word, letter for letter. And where we need to, we use ultraviolet light or magnification or even multispectral imaging so that we can make these documents legible for you to read. Examples of our careful transcription have been sent to the National Archives, and we've received their formal endorsement.
TypeScript transcriptions of handwritten texts cannot perfectly replicate the original documents. For that reason, the volume editors use symbols like these to help the reader better understand what is happening in the original document.
As you look at the transcripts of the Joseph Smith papers, you'll notice these strike-through marks or angle brackets or bold typeface. And these are symbols that we use in our transcription to convey certain elements of the document. For example, things that have been crossed out or otherwise canceled. Things that have been added, or Joseph Smith's handwriting in the case of boldface type. Now, all of the things that we've done to make these transcripts as accurate as possible are described in the statement of editorial method in the beginning of the book, in the front matter. And if you're doing any kind of research or reading where it's really important for you to know exactly how things are transcribed, you can always go and read this statement of editorial method. You'll probably at least want to look at this list of symbols. This list shows all the symbols that we used to try to give you the most accurate transcript that we could.
An essential duty of documentary editors is to help us, the reader, better understand what is not readily apparent within the text. And there are a number of ways that they do that. For example, what you see here. In the beginning of the book, in the introductory material, they give an overview of what's within the volume. That's called the front matter. And then, supplemental material, information about people and places, is placed in the back of the book. That is called the back matter. Now, another way of helping us understand the text is the extensive use of footnotes at the bottom of the page.
Now we move beneath the actual text to the footnotes and the endnotes that are used to help explain things in the text. Many footnotes are used to explain passages that are ambiguous or really hard, difficult to understand. Other passages are not ambiguous. They read very straightforward, but they are more accurately understood if we bring to them some historical background or cultural context or maybe a parallel account of the same incident. A lot of our annotation is what's called routine annotation, or notes of identification. And these are notes that identify a person that's mentioned in the text, or a place, or clarify a date, or explain a word that we don't use anymore. Basic things like this. And the Joseph Smith papers utilizes back matter to handle a lot of this information. We have a biographical directory with notes on all the people that appear in the volumes, a geographical directory with notes on the places that come up in the volumes, as well as maps that show where they are, a glossary to explain words that aren't used anymore, or words that are still used today but in a different way. By systematically removing this kind of information to the back of the book from the foot of the page where it's competing with the text for space on the printed page, then we have more room for the actual text of the document.
A website, such as the one you see here, is another feature of the Joseph Smith Papers Project. It will make information more readily accessible to readers, and it will also be a place where some of the more unwieldy information that can't fit into the volumes, well, that's where it'll be shown.
All of the documentation for the footnotes is there at the end of the note. But the documentation for the information in the back matter, like the biographical directory and the geographical directory, that documentation is found on the Joseph Smith Papers website, josephsmithpapers.org. And so the website is integrally related with the book. Now, to add all that documentation into the book and then have all of those sources in the works cited would make the books much bigger, heavier, more expensive, have less text in them. So that documentation for the back matter can be found on the website.
So, with all of that, how does one actually use the first volume in the journal series?
If you know of an event in early Mormon history from the 1830s that you're interested in, and you know the date, or you know about when the date is, you can try looking this up. Go to the table of contents where the various journals are listed with the dates they cover. And then when you turn to that journal, then start looking for the date using the editorial datelines that introduce all the entries. For example, let's say you want to know more about what caused the so-called Mormon War in Missouri. In Journals Volume 1, you can look at the Joseph Smith's two Missouri journals. Or let's say you're interested in, say, the dedication of the House of the Lord in Kirtland, Ohio, and you know that that happened in the end of March of 1836. So you go to the table of contents and you find the journal that covers that time period. And then you turn to that journal and you use the editorial datelines to find that date. This is how scholars generally use these volumes. They have a specific document in mind, and they go to the table of contents to find that document and go straight to it. The other major entry point that scholars use for documentary editions is the index. And there you have all the subjects covered in the volume, the people, the places, the themes, topics. And that's a place where you can go and try to look up whatever is of interest to you. Maybe you have an early Mormon ancestor. You can look in the index to see if they're there, and then turn to that page in the volume and read about that, what was written about them in Joseph Smith's journal. Or maybe you're interested in another figure in early Mormon history, like Oliver Cowdery or Frederick G. Williams. You can use the index to look up things about them. Or anything else. You can try the index and see if there's anything for you, and it'll take you straight to that page. Now, Journals Volume 1 does not have an index printed in the back, and that's because it's the first volume of a three-volume series. And Journals 3, the last volume in the series, will have a cumulative index for the entire series. And that way, when the series is complete, if you want to look something up, you don't have to check every index for every volume. You can go straight to the cumulative index in the back of the final volume and find anything from the entire series. However, for the moment, there is an index available online at the Joseph Smith Papers website, josephsmithpapers.org. In fact, at the Joseph Smith Papers website, you can order a free softbound copy of the index.
Next week, we will continue our discussion of Journals Volume 1, and then we'll open up the second book, and the scholars will show us how to use Revelations and Translations Volume 1, and along the way, not only will we see how to use the book, but our understanding of Joseph Smith and the early Restoration will be deepened and enriched. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.